2 compilation, Ese Muerto No Lo Cargo Yo. And that about wraps it up for all of the things that we had on our show today. Espero que les haya gustado. Y repito que si quieren saber un poquito más de lo que hemos puesto, se lo puede chequear en el sitio de web wmbr.org. You can actually check it all out on our website. All the stuff that we've been playing, wmbr.org. Now lists the shows, the pieces that we play them. I'm making no sense, I know. And you can also always find our shows archived there in the archives section. And you can check out previous Sferios on Sferio's own website, which is web.mit.edu/hemisphere. Sferio is a project of the Western Hemisphere Project. which is itself a student organization here at MIT. But Sferio proudly claims membership in both the student camp and the community camp. It's almost time for us to walk on out of here, and that means we've got to do one more song. Holger Iger provides us our announcement music. And today, we need to tell you about the Festival da Independência do Brasil, the Boston's Brazilian Independence Festival, starting September 6th, that's this weekend, Sunday, and running all the way through till September 15th. The outdoor festival component of this runs from 12 to 6 p.m. at Artesani Park, Soldiers Field Road in Boston. That's actually in the Alston area of Boston. And there will be musical performances, pony rides, balloons, sculptures, lots of good food, no doubt. Performances by capoeirista Mestre Chuvisco and his group, and also Receita de Samba and some other organizations performing as well. The rest of the week features film screenings, other musical performances, and the hoisting of the Brazilian flag. That's actually Sunday morning. If you want to go down to Boston City Hall, you can witness that. All of those good things can be found explained in further detail on the Verde Amarelo website, verdeamarelo.org. That's spelled V-E-R-D-E-A-M-A-R-E-L-O. .org. Si ustedes tienen alguna pregunta acerca de esta información que acabamos de darle, pues pueden siempre llamarnos aquí al 617-253-8810 o nos pueden mandar email. Nuestra dirección electrónica es Sferio, S-P-H-E-R-I-O, @wmbr.org. Ha sido un gran placer, mi gente. Hasta la próxima. It's 7 o'clock and time mellow out, y'all, with those wacky ways. I'm not making any sense. I'm just gonna be quiet and stay tuned. We'll be right back.
good the evening is tonight. We're here at WMBR 88.1 FM, and it is September 4th, which this year happens to be Ramadan 14. But of course, those of you who are fasting know this. I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran, and this is Music for Human. I hope the fasting day has been going well for those of our listeners who are fasting. For those of you, we have arranged to have the following sound play when it is time to break your fast. So when you hear that sound, we will all take a break and have a nice drink of water, maybe a fig or a pear, whatever is at hand, and we'll all feel lovely again. Music for Humans is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. I have with me four illustrious co-hosts who are very well versed in many things. And first among them, chronologically, is Professor Levine. Professor, welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure in being here today is quite profound.
It is profound, but is it deep?
It is deep, yet profound.
Also, in spite of being deep, it remains profound.
Yes.
And for the record, are you fasting, Professor?
Of course, as I mentioned last week, being a New Age practitioner, I accept all religions and all beliefs. So I must fast when any religion dictates that I must fast. So I end up fasting 223 days of the year. Today, of course, being one of them. Fortunately, today I will be able to break my fast with you. Last time I wasn't able to because of the Mayan fast that began as soon as sundown occurred.
Of course, the Mayan nighttime fast, it must really be inconvenient for you when they co-occur like that with Ramadan.
That's right. And of course, there is one escape route. One can avoid the fast by sacrificing a virgin. But unfortunately, at that night, I didn't have any virgins at hand.
A virgin goat.
Right.
Well, we'd also like to welcome Aurora, who is a voice specialist. Aurora, welcome.
Namaste.
And Aurora has been, of course, with us for some time, though she has been on hiatus. Before.
Yes, I find that staying in one place for too long allows my ki to settle, and I like to keep myself in an erased state of awareness and excitement.
That sounds really lovely. Well, we also have with us Dr. Zina van Hoechen, Frau Dr. Zina van Hoechen. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy that you are with us. Dr. Van Kuchen is a professional in the neurological arts.
Indeed.
We're also pleased, I believe, to be joined by George, the Mayan shaman from Beyond the Glass. George, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me, Dr. Jalis.
Well, it's wonderful that you are back with us, George. And I'm told that in a few moments we will have our wonderful Siberian friend, Ivan the Mellow, who will return to the air with us. And as always, I'd like to announce, you know, early on that the show is not really about us, but it's about connecting and communing with the listeners in as many ways as we can, and one of these ways is by you calling in. And if you'd like to do so at any time, just dial our number 617-253-8810. I believe we've already had a few callers, but unfortunately we are unable to take them so early. And I'm told that today we have a prize for our fourth caller. So the prize will be given to the fourth caller when they call in. But for the moment, let's keep it a secret prize.
Of course, there's a prize for every caller.
The prize is for every caller. Let's take the first caller here on the air. Caller one, welcome.
Hello.
Hello, welcome.
Oh, thank you. I've been listening for a few weeks now, and I really wanted to say I'm infatuated with the doctor and Ivan.
Which doctor?
Isn't he is he a doctor?
Which doctor?
I don't know which doctor.
I think she's
probably... Do you have a witch doctor?
Well, in a manner. I mean, I believe the term witch doctor was used for people who heal, but without using, methods that are more widely accepted. So
well, it's a bit of a derogatory term, so we'd prefer to use
others. I'm sorry.
That's fine. So if you could perhaps come up with your own word, I find that just creating your own word for whatever you mean by witch doctor...
I don't
just
know
whatever
his name.
Sounds
That's
come into your mind when you think of him.
I wanted to call you.
Yes, was that what I heard?
You. Hello?
Yes.
I wanted to call you because the first time I listened to your program, you were talking about, you said you wanted to spank ink babies, and I wondered what an ink baby is, but... if I could find out what an ink baby was, I would spank it.
That's an excellent question. I think that for me, an ink baby is the sensation of newness that comes when one sucks out the ink from a squid. Oh. If you eat a squid that still has the ink inside, it will actually turn the teeth black. And this process of blackening the teeth can serve to induce... memories that have not previously been remembered, and then the act of brushing the teeth, or one must often have to use a whitening toothpaste to get the ink off, is a process of rebirth for the oral cavity as a whole.
Well, that's a good idea. I wanted to call because I feel that I'm deep and profound and human.
Well, so, caller, where are you from? I detect a bit of maybe a Midwestern twang.
Do you? Oh, no. I'm from Boston.
I meant a New England twang.
Yes, you're right. I'm very infatuated with the voices of Ivan and the doctor.
Well, let's bring Ivan on then. Ivan, are you there?
Добрый вечер, дорогие товарищи.
Marhaban, Ivan. It seems that you have a fan.
Yes. Back at you. I am really very fond of your voice on the radio. It's lovely.
Thank you. I have many, many fans all across the world, and also here in Siberia and in the United States.
Yes.
In particular, there are multiple organizations that... actually, for some reason, I think view me as their cult leader. So the Culinary Institute of America and the Food and Beverage Incorporated Consortium, the two organizations are really fond of my voice and also of many of my prolific ideas.
It's because of your book on the New Age culinary thought,
yes,
I imagine.
The beautiful thing about Ivan the Mellow's voice, speaking from a vocal therapist's perspective, is that it reeks of wisdom and of years past and just all sorts of enlightenment gained.
When I think of Ivan's voice, I believe I can taste the mosquitoes of the Siberian plains.
Mm. Oh, that's very interesting.
That's delicious.
I don't understand the combination of political and culinary.
Well, frankly, neither do I, but somehow they tend to blend in.
Well, Ivan, I think, is well known for statements that he made in the late 70s about the meaning of food and how the movement of food has affected, at the time, Soviet thought. And I believe that you wrote a very famous publication on potatoes at the time. Of course, similar events have occurred throughout history. Perhaps the most famous is the Irish potato famine, which resulted in a mass migration of Irish immigrants.
That's interesting. My grandmother came because of that. She came to this country. So, yes, it was a terrible thing.
Well, let's think about food a little bit. It always has struck me as a kind of strange fact that we take these products of the land, pieces of animals, and instead of just ingesting them and taking their caloric and energy product, we instead mash them up and combine them in strange and wondrous ways.
I think it's interesting that you said that because you were just talking about fasting.
Well, imagine that you're an alien or a Martian observing the planet Earth as an anthropologist studying humans, and you observe that they take the output of the land, and instead of just eating it, they decide to add things to it, spices, and to blend it in creative ways.
Well, I must interject here. All the spices are elements of the land, and mixing all of these elements together can lead to a more wholesome experience.
And also mashing and cooking tends to bring out more of the caloric, you know, our ability to ingest more of this and take more from the land and the food.
And of course, according to Siberian tradition, in our next life, we will all be reincarnated as either fruits or vegetables. I envision myself to be reincarnated as a potato.
Oh.
I would have thought perhaps a turnip, Ivan.
Well, I think you're all masticators. And I think it's lovely. But I don't understand this situation of fasting and believing in all religions, and so fasting for all fasts. I myself, I'm against all religions and fasting at no fast.
Well, I think it's sort of the same thing in a certain sense. Like being for the religions, for all religions, is not being for any single religion. So in a certain sense, we have the same point of view.
And I'd like to also interject here that fasting can be regarded on a plane that does not, that as long as you admit some spirituality, I think you can admit some benefit to the fast or any sort of deprivation.
Ah, I see.
No, of course.
The meaning behind it is important.
It is, but also I think that in Professor Levine's case, he's enjoying the fact that multiple spiritual enterprises often have a multiplicative effect, so that the whole is greater certainly than the sum and is proportional linearly to the product of the spirituality of each of the fasts.
Well, I like to think of it more of having an enjoyment of people than necessarily of just the religion itself.
I've often wondered if I were placed on some deserted tropical island by myself, would I abandon all religions? Is religion...
Would they abandon you?
Ah, yeah.
Now, of course, the alternative to fasting, as I alluded to during our last show, when I was visiting our brethren in Tokyo, Japan, and this alternative lifestyle is known as gorging. And I think you might consider it.
Well, I really enjoyed talking with you, and I hope I can speak to you again another time.
Well, thank you so much, caller, for joining us.
Thank you. Good night.
Ma'asalama. Well, listeners, also that sound meant that those of our listeners who subscribe to the Ramadan fast may now break their fast. So I, Dr. Jalis Zakran, will step out for a moment to enjoy a cookie.
And let me just, one parting thought before we take our food break, is that an ancient Indian guru once said that one should fill their stomach half with food, half with water, a quarter with water rather, and a quarter with air.
Boy, was that delicious.
I find fascinating these inducements of deprivation among relatively privileged people. That is, people who are hungry by choice rather than by imposition, by structural qualities. And I'm curious when there are parallels drawn between the fast and deprivation of another kind, to what extent that this is actually a fallacy that that ignores the structural realities that, that privileged people are not doing anything to actually help the starving by fasting,
mm-hmm.
that it is in many ways a very selfish act.
Well, if I recall, under the Muslim Ramadan, usually people who are fasting, as they spend less money, do donate to the impoverished, and their fasting acts as a reminder of how those impoverished feel throughout the month.
Can it really be a reminder, even if the physical sensation is the same? The intention, the whole context is completely different. I think that thinking about the production of starvation, whether it's an individual choice or that is associated to, with, or attached to a spiritual growth, that that's a completely different context than someone simply not having enough money to buy food. And that for someone to say, well, I have solidarity with the starving, and I indeed experience as they experience because I also do not have food in my belly. Actually, the context is everything. And
for my part, I feel like actually being hungry is part of it. And if it's really all about the context, then a person who is able to eat can do nothing short of throwing it all away in order to really identify with someone who is poor, and I don't think that's right either.
Well, I think we're being unfair to the other senses. There are multiple mechanisms of sensory deprivation which can lead to enlightenment.
Also, the bonds of solidarity and of spirituality are very strong. Those without much money and without much food can choose to engage in a fast just as well as a rich person for similar reasons, either a purification of the body or to maintain the solidarity in a religious structure.
Well, I personally find in my own path and journey that I can best feel empathy for the poor by eating fortune cookies, because of course in many countries poor people can only afford to eat fortune cookies. So to symbolize this act, I thought I would actually break my fast now by eating a fortune cookie on the air and reading the fortune.
Well, please do so, Professor.
Yeah, so the listeners hopefully will not be disturbed by the very loud crunching noises.
Professor Levine, have you eaten the fortune?
No, I haven't.
I would like to get back to something that George said previously, that saying that the poor may also fast. However, the poor would not be able to engage in the kind of gorging or binging that Ivan and his culture find so spiritually rewarding. Even something like eating a fortune cookie, if magnified, would be unattainable for the poor.
This could be true, but there are also certain political and familial and various other things that mechanisms available in certain societies where there is competitive feasting or competitive provisioning, where the rich will provide the poor with enough food to engage in gorging. But you're correct in assuming that they would probably not be able to do this of their own volition, of their own means.
I just wanted to say that I received a very profound fortune in my fortune cookie. It says that the graduate student dental plan was brought to you by the GSC.
Well, you know, it's always good to get a reminder of, you know, who is responsible in your life for your teeth.
I think it's amazing that the cookie knew your dental plan.
Of course, you could imagine an even more profound fortune saying your teeth were brought to you by God. Or by generous support from God.
That's precisely true.
And renewed by God, in fact, since the teeth that we are born with are removed and replaced.
They're constantly being destroyed and then repaired.
Right, by God and various dental fillings.
Of course, I do often wonder if, you know, such fortunes would ever appear to a shark. And, like, what form would that take? Do you think that a shark might, for instance, have fortune dolphins?
Well, or a tooth fairy may appear as a dolphin for a shark.
I would think seals.
Wittgenstein once said that even if a lion could speak, we would not be able to understand him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same idea applies to the fortune cookies that sharks would eat.
Well, I'd just like to say that to reveal our prize, since we've reached the center of our show, our program here, and we still have not had our fourth caller. So the prize that we would like to give is a pair of tickets to Ponyo at the Coolidge Corner Theater, which is a film by Hayao Miyazaki.
I fear that people may be refraining from calling in the hopes of being the fourth caller.
Or is that likely?
Well, it's possible that we could maybe bump it up.
Okay, we will give it to the next caller.
The next caller.
Miyazaki is a wonderful artist. He did Spirited Away and Howl's Moving Castle and several other films. That, mm-hmm. They're just beautiful. They all have beautiful statements about our environment.
And I think one of the themes of those films is neurogenesis.
It may also be possible that no one is listening, or that no one would like the Miyazaki tickets.
Well, our number is 617-253-8810. Call in, even if you don't want the tickets, and just tell us that you don't want them.
Going back to this Miyazaki theme of neurogenesis, I believe we do have a caller.
Let's see if that's the case.
I hope that they reject the tickets as an act of fast.
Caller, welcome to the air.
Hey.
You've won the tickets.
Hey, awesome.
Congratulations.
Thanks very much. I just driving over work and just turned you guys on, and it's great.
Well, that's wonderful. Let me put you on hold, and then someone will get your number and your name for the thingy.
Thanks very much.
All right, thank you, caller.
We should probably try to elicit the caller's views on neurogenesis.
Should we see if we can call them back onto the air?
Maybe.
We'll ask the operator to give them back to us afterward.
Well, neurogenesis is such a beautiful thought that we can build things with our minds, that we can concentrate on our own bodies and sort of add to them.
Yeah, it's the idea that by thinking in a certain way, we can actually affect our body's growth. So by, for example, thinking positive thoughts, we can help produce lean muscle cells in our body. And if we want, we can think negative thoughts or maybe blubbery thoughts and produce many more fat cells.
Well, I heard this beautiful case of this woman who had a biopsy done, and she had evidence of cervical cancer.
That's a beautiful story.
Well, not at that point, no, but further on, she every night would concentrate on her cancer cells and would imagine them dying or turning into beautiful, healthy cells. And then at her next checkup, her doctor said that her cervix was one of the most wonderful cervixes he'd ever seen.
Except, of course, the one strange fact was that they x-rayed the cervix and they found that the cancer cells had become butterflies, which had then died a pretty grim death encased in her cervix.
Yes, but the thought was nice.
I would like to now lead our audience in a bit of guided meditation. Whether you are someone who's been affected by disease or injury, or if you're just perhaps stressed out at the end of the work week, getting ready for what, of course, is Labor Day weekend. As a socialist, this is an important holiday for me, and I would like to, in solidarity, lead you all in the following exercise. So, first, I would like you to breathe in. Inhale and exhale. And as you inhale, I want you to take in all the beauty and good of the world into yourself and exhale all of the exploitation that has occurred to you during your week. Inhale the glory of laboring for your own benefit, and exhale the excesses of late capitalism. Inhale and exhale. I would now like you to focus on a particular part of your body, specifically the very tips of your fingers. Feel the ridges on your fingertips, the curvature of your fingerprints, which are unique in every individual. You are a special snowflake, unique and one in your own unity. Even as each finger is alone, it is connected to the other fingers through the hand, through the bones and blood vessels. And to think of everything that you can do with your hands, that you've been doing with your hands this week and this day, what you might do with them tonight. Will you be holding a fork to eat some food to break your fast? Will you be holding someone's hand, perhaps caressing someone, pushing back your hair? Maybe you are in a car right now with your hands gripping the steering wheel. And I would like you to breathe in through your fingertips and out through your fingertips. Feel all the positive energy coming in through your fingerprints and negative energy being expelled outward like rays of light shooting out through your fingers. And you should now wiggle your fingers. Feel the transformation that has occurred and allow that to greet you into your Labor Day weekend.
Is it already Labor Day?
In this country, Labor Day is Monday, but we seem to have taken the entire weekend as a labor celebration.
Frau Doctor, I must inquire, was one of the intended side effects of this guided meditation that the meditator perceived themselves as a hippo?
That is one reaction that some people may have, because the fingertips are indeed like, we have fingernails on the other side. And so if you are one who thinks in inversions, you may be thinking about fingernails when I speak of fingertips. And of course, the hippo is one of the other creatures that also has fingernails or hooves.
Because I seem to be unable to shake this feeling now of being a hippo.
I think that with any meditation, it's often in any trance-like state, one may have a certain awareness of their blood flow, which leads to a sensation of heaviness. And so you may associate the hippopotamus with a kind of heaviness. The hippopotamus, or water horse, as we would call it.
It may also be a linguistic effect, because I understand that in some circles, hippo is the term that is used to describe a very large hippie. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised.
On the hippocampus, of course, is the region of the brain that specializes in meditation.
Precisely, precisely. One of the regions that is known to receive an increase in blood flow during particularly intense bouts of meditation.
So I actually would like to share my own image that was brought about by this meditation. I was transfixed with an image of Tovarish Lenin speaking to me in person. It was, and he told me in the immortal words, "Uchitsa, uchitsa, uchitsa," and it was a sensation that just I'm at a loss of words. I'm sorry.
Well, I also wanted to bring up, we were talking about neurogenesis, which is the idea that you can grow your body in certain ways through the power of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a related subject, which I've recently discovered, called neurogenealogy, which is the idea that by thinking in certain ways, one can produce offspring that have certain properties.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand that one of the interesting things about New Age is that we can take such a thing and always look for a reversal. So in this case, neurogenealogy might be to try to change your ancestry.
Well, I've tried that, but I've encountered very serious difficulties with the space-time continuum, which I haven't quite been able to overcome yet.
But I think concentrating on one's linealogy goes against the New Age spirit. I mean, we are all one. We are all connected to the Earth, and thinking about one's ancestors being different as changing us in more than, you know, specific, you know, unimportant ways is just ridiculous.
Well, some of my ancestors were actually dualists. Well, some were dualists, meaning that they dueled, and others were dualists, meaning that they believed in two forces, one of good, one of evil. In fact, sometimes there were some ancestors who were both dualists, and they would duel over which should prevail, good or evil.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, see, now, one can take the road which says that this sort of meditation will disrupt things, but another view is that not doing this meditation will disrupt things because you will have another genealogy. You understand? So, like, we are already experiencing the fruits of our future meditative labors.
Well, I think the whole neurogenealogy thing comes out of the neurogenesis, but in particular, one needs a virus to go into the gametes, and one must consider the exact virus strand that will be inserted into the sperm or egg cells. And so this is actually a very fruitful time to consider such actions, as we are being beleaguered by the swine flu. And
so one could, in a sense, use a dangerous virus like the swine flu and use it, modify it to make it a virus that is useful for gene therapy.
Well, I actually believe that the current epidemic that we're experiencing in the United States of obesity is in fact not a result of overeating and lack of exercise, as many so-called scientists believe, but rather a result of neurogenealogy. I find that in about the late 70s, many potential parents started having very, we might call, flabby sexual thoughts, which resulted in flabby children.
Well, Professor Levine, I have often wondered if our current state of corpulence was not due to the collective meditations and prayers of our ancestors who were looking for health and prosperity. And that this, all these meditations and prayers perhaps landed in a valley and escaped simultaneously, resulting in widespread obesity, particularly here. Let's take another call and widen the circle. It's always a sound we love to hear. Sorry we missed that call.
But I really like that thought, the idea that the prayers of all the generations weren't really timed very well. And they all clumped together somehow, and it ended in a superabundance of the result of the prayer, which is in fact not very beneficial.
Like two small balls of putty in the same bowl, sooner or later there will only be one ball of putty.
Well, you know, this could be part of the impending end of the creation, as many New Agers are beginning to believe in, the end of the world in 2012.
2012. That's
I've heard of this. This is the idea that the age of the new cosmological age, is that the term that is used?
Yes, I believe so.
The age of Aquarius will begin on 2012. But you know, when I was young, I heard these people saying the same thing about 1973 and 1999 and now 2012, and I'm sure that when 2012, you know, passes and the world hasn't ended in a great way, that we will set another deadline for change.
It is the predication of a new creation, as it were, the ending of this one and the beginning of a new one. And many people are much more inclined to find this feasible rather than the Y2K scare or in the 70s or whichever else, because the Maya were so in tune with the forces of the universe and the movements of the stars that they predicted this, and they believe that it will come true because we've been right in the past.
I just want to interject slightly here that this end of the world that we're discussing is like the death card in tarot, that it is not an ending, but it is a fresh beginning and an ability for the whole world to change.
You are quite right.
Large change.
And in fact, actually, I subscribe to the line of thought that the world has already ended as we know it back in 1991 after the collapse of the great Soviet Empire.
Hmm.
I think that if we think in terms not of a cataclysm, but a caesura, or perhaps a caesurism, that this will allow us to be more open to something like a new age, that it doesn't have to be a complete destruction and rebirth, but simply a change of thinking. If everyone simply would hit the reset button on their brain by doing some kind of meditative act, or perhaps using a certain substance like whippets would, for example, be an effective way to set this button.
Precisely.
Then we can really engage this caesurism.
Well, let's engage a caller here. Caller, welcome to the air. Caller?
Hello.
Yes, marhaban.
Hello, this is David Talbo.
Oh, welcome, David.
Hello.
David, of course, has some expertise on penguins.
Yes, although right now I've been focusing more on pigs.
On pig studies, which I think are really relevant to the current epidemic.
Well, David, what are your thoughts on neurogenealogy?
I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about pigs lately, and I've noticed I've my feet have started to change slightly.
Your feet?
Yes.
So this is, again, some sort of neurological generative effect?
Yeah.
Can you describe the change to your feet? Is there any change to the skin?
I've noticed that my toenails have kind of spread and moved up, at least to, like, the first knuckle of my toe fingers.
Dr. Levine, you were right.
Yes, and of course, I've tried to engage neurogenesis in my own life to my benefit, and as you all know, I appear very young for my age. I'm in my mid-70s, but I appear to be in my mid-20s, and my face is known to have a very radiant glow, and this radiance is really a byproduct of my meditation practice.
Well, perhaps one must be careful with the neurogenesis, though, as David Talbo is obviously experiencing. When one focuses on one thought for too long, perhaps it can have a drastic effect on one's physiology.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it's important to use neurogenealogy as well, and to focus your thoughts on your offspring and produce many offspring in that process.
Now, do we believe that it is possible, granted there are many routes, for a person imagining a change in themselves and then having the change appear, but do we believe that it is possible by having negative thoughts about another person, or even positive thoughts about them, to have that change appear?
I think it depends. We're all, as Aurora has mentioned so many times, we're all one, so we all can potentially affect each other through the power of thought. But the collective human soul is divided into limbs.
Well, and I'd like to remind everyone that this old saying, we are one, is actually a bit abridged. It's from a longer saying that began, we are one or the other.
Well, that's exactly right. And we, although we are all connected in some way, many of our souls might be from the arm of the collective human soul, and many of us may have souls from the genitals of the collective human soul, or the eyebrows of the collective human soul,
or the tooth, and if there were really, you know, if we are to believe the abridged version, then there would be a single person doing, perhaps consuming the collective banana, but the longer saying would seem to imply that there are two collective souls. and that therefore the tooth from one may be arguing with the tooth from the other. And frankly, I think that meshes a little better with our own personal experiences.
Right. And of course, even if one is from, let's call it, collective human soul A, mm-hmm. one can still have an effect on a person from collective human soul B by having collective human soul A, or the body of collective human soul A, physically interacting with, say, biting the thigh of the body of collective human soul B.
Naturally.
Now, of course, to bring the Marxist neologistical angle into this discussion, I think Orwell put it best. All of us, all of the animals are created equal, but some are more equal than others.
Precisely, from his famous dystopian novel.
So perhaps David Talbot is becoming more equal than others to the pig?
Possibly. And of course, as you might recall, in the novel The Animal Farm, as the pig actually symbolized this symbol of unadulterated power. And it's interesting that Mr. Talbot has identified himself with this particular creature.
Let's bring in another voice to our discussion. Caller 2, welcome.
This is caller number 1 again.
Welcome back, caller 1.
Oh, thank you. I just had one question. I would like to know if anyone knows how many swine are actually sick.
How many swine are actually sick? Well,
yes.
I'm not sure that any swine are sick. I'm not sure really why.
Well, why do they call it the swine flu?
I think it's a matter of definition. I think that the swine flu might be for humans, just the transition from human to pig.
Ah, so it's describing the effect of the flu rather than the cause.
Right, and I think that the reason we might think that I don't know if the pigs are sick, but if they are, perhaps it's just that we're seeing them slowly transition into.
Some of our friends may actually be pigs that are afflicted with the swine flu who have then become humans.
I've fallen ill, and although I don't know if I should call it ill, because even though my nose is stuffed up, I think that just might be just because it's changed.
It's a process of transmogrification. Yep.
Now, I know Aurora works closely with pigs in her work. Aurora, are you aware of any ill piggy?
Yes, it's unfortunate. The pigs actually helped me in my vocal therapy, as assisting them with their harsh grunts helps me learn how to assess my worst cases. And the pigs actually received the flu virus from the birds, known as the avian flu, and then we have this modified version that the humans received from the pigs, that is an avian swine epidemic. And it's very sad that, I mean, there is some sort of transmogrification going on between the birds and the pigs and the humans.
And the birds and the bees.
I personally believe that it's Mother Nature trying to bring us back together, to bring us back to our roots as we've gone
the cow,
so far.
Yeah, let's have a thought experiment for a second. Imagine that the birds, the avian flu and the swine flu combined, and the swine all grew wings and the ability to fly. And also imagine for a second that the power of words is something that always comes about. So every time someone has said, when pigs fly, it would actually come about.
Mm-hmm.
Then imagine what chaos would ensue when the pigs actually began to fly. And every prediction that was ever made with the condition, when pigs fly, would come about.
Every baseball team would win the World Series.
Simultaneously.
I think what's happening here is that the swine then, if Aurora's account is correct, the swine are a zoological vector for the flu to reach humans. Is this true?
It's somewhat true. There are modifications that allow viruses to spread from different creatures. And again, I think this is, you know, as depressing as being sick is, I think this is beautiful that we are so close to one another, the humans and the animals, that we can share the same experiences. Mm-hmm.
So that we can all return to a form of sort of viscous mass of enzymes and acids and...
I believe we all wish to become that oneness again, that one same puddle, and that ever since we've formed ourselves into different physical bodies, our mental states have been somewhat anguished.
So it's really the collective human soul, you might say, is a mirage, and there's really a single collective animal soul that we're all a part of.
I think that this drive towards entropy is one that is simply a reaction to the drive towards unmediated growth, growth for growth's sake, that is the modus operandi for capitalism and a commercial economy, and that clearly we need to critique that, but I don't believe that we need to simply do the reverse and say that we need to destabilize and actually destroy our cell membranes to the point that we are simply molecules and macromolecules.
So, in other words, the swine flu is a symptom of the greater ills of the capitalist society.
Well, Dr. Van Hoogen, I'm not sure that we have any choice. I think nature will take us where it intends to take us. And
I don't believe that nature has an intention, per se. That to say so is actually to ascribe a kind of intention onto nature. That there are ecological forces that we may attempt to describe, and as we attempt to describe them, we frequently anthropomorphize them and assign emotions to them.
I'm really worried about all the pigs, because I know if all the hospitals are filled with pigs, they have no insurance. I just don't know what will happen.
Well, I think we have hope as long as President Obama is in office. But unfortunately, callers both, we are reaching the top of the hour.
Well, good night.
Thank you so much, caller one, and David Talbot. We hope that your transmutation is easy.
Thank you.
Thanks also to my hosts for being here again with me for another wonderful hour of Music for Humans. Thanks to Ivan the Mello.
Дорогие товарищи, спасибо. До свидания.
And to George the Shaman.
Gracias.
And also thanks to Frau Dr. Zina van Hoogen.
Solidarity.
And to Aurora.
Namaste.
And to the ever-present Professor Levine.
Again, it was my intense pleasure.
I'm Dr. Jalis Sakran here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. We are coming to you live from the beautiful Walker Memorial here Fridays at 7 p.m. Music for Humans is New Age Talk Radio with an emphasis on you. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. Ma'a Salama.
For safety. Number one.
cars and bikes stop at red lights.
It's against the law for car drivers or bicycle riders to ignore traffic signals.
So don't buzz through red lights. There might be a pedestrian or turning car that doesn't see you coming.
Number two,
look first before you open your door.
Numerous bicyclists have been injured or even killed by car doors suddenly opening into them.
Look first, and bicyclists, stay out of the door zone.
Number three,
cross with the signal.
You are safest if you wait for a walk or green traffic signal.
Don't jaywalk. That's just walking into trouble.
Number four,
cars and bikes should stop for pedestrians and unsignalized crosswalks.
Be nice, be legal, be safe.
Brought to you as a public service by the Cambridge Bicycle Committee and this station.
Oh,